Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Happy Tuesday. A few minutes past 6 p.m. So you know I'm always honest with you guys. And so our 6 p.m. hour has always been our lowest rated hour. Always. There's something in the business called PUM line, which I think is like, I don't know, people using media, maybe meters. Anyway, it goes down at six, just in general. St. Louis is not a late traffic kind of place. And in PM drive, it spikes up around 5 o'clock. And then after six, it goes down. And some shows do better than others. And we've always struggled in the six. We still do fine, but it's just lower rated than three, four, and five. So, two things. Do my job for me. If you'd like to reach out on Twitter and let us know, hey, I would like this. And I know everyone's different. Like, some people would love to have like a think tank type thing, and other people would love to just, hey, I like what you do now. You guys just sort of talk and it's easy breezy. But if you have any ideas, especially during this 6 o'clock late commute hour, let us know, because I'm always, always happy rather than beating my head against the wall or, you know, straining our brains to try to come up with what you guys want. Just tell us. So we thought today, and for the foreseeable future, at least right at six, we're not going to do it for an hour, but we could do listener questions. And because when we do the DGS Live, seemingly your favorite part is when you guys can get the microphone and ask us stuff either about the show or just, you know, life in general. So we'll do some of those today. Rach, where do people tweet you to send their own questions?
At RachelZ971. You can also tweet Tony Colombo 971, Colombo with all O's.
So this one is from Tom, probably Turbrock, says that I really enjoy and appreciate how diverse the views are on the show, which they really, really are, going from me to Tony to Taliban. How much crap do you really take for that, and where do you think the anger comes from? Anyone?
I don't really think we take that much crap for it. I see most of the I've seen mostly people commenting and getting mad during think tanks more than anything else.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's where I was going to go to. First of all, we get way more love and appreciation for the diversity on the show than we do hatred. But the hate that we do get seems to come from a very specific place. And it's kind of two things, but they're just two sides of the same coin to me. And Rach, you're the one who reads most of this, so correct me if you disagree. But it's basically people saying, I listen to 97.1 because it is my safe haven. I can get all the liberal opinions I want on mainstream media. I don't come here to hear liberal opinions at all. The second one, sort of related, is I don't want to put out anything negative about Republicans, conservatives, or Trump, because that could hurt the cause. And so when you give airtime to someone, like recently they complained about us having Megan McBride on during the think tank, then that's bad, as if this is some sort of like religious station and we have a satanic hour. And my answer to that has always been the same. I'm the only one that's original to the station. It's not my station. I don't own it, but I'm the only one that's been here 19 years through all the changes. And it used to be not political. Then it was female talk, whatever the hell that means. And the show stayed pretty consistent. It's evolved, but I've always been consistent in that we are always going to feature every point of view. And especially when you do things like the think tank, which, if you think about it, Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday and Meet the Press and every single Sunday show, which are so hugely popular, you never, ever, ever see four liberals, four conservatives. It's always a mix. And so it's always going to be a mix here. We're going to be a mix. I never want my staff, my co-hosts, to be monolithic in their beliefs. We're certainly not. And anytime we have a panel discussion, how boring is it to have four people who just go, yeah, I agree exactly with what you just said.
Yeah, I don't even think you really need to explain yourself on that, because the people that do complain about that, they're in the minority. We've had people call into the show and say both of those things before, like say it on the air. But I think the majority of our listeners listen because we do give both sides of the coin. And yeah, I think most people get the think tank.
And the show.
The think tank was conceived to be like, let's get liberals on with conservatives. And we've never done an all liberal panel. So I don't know.
Yeah. And you're just barking up the wrong tree. And maybe listening to the wrong show if you're looking for us to carry the Republican Party or Trump's water. I think that's dangerous. I in general support Trump in spite of the many things he does that makes me crazy, and will certainly not vote for any of the Democrats that are currently, you know, on the debate stage. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to pretend that everything he does is perfect. And if that's what you're looking for, then you can look elsewhere.
Look somewhere else.
Yeah, right.
What was the other question?
That was Tom's only question.
Oh, okay.
And then Stacy would like to know our typical day for each of us.
Ooh. I would like to know that from you, because I don't know what you do in the morning, Dave.
So typically, there's no real typical, because I have a lot of meetings. I'll go get coffee quite a lot. Come in here and do show prep, go to lunch, come back, do a little more show prep. We record things in the early afternoon, and then we usually have about a half an hour of downtime, where lately I've been eating a lot of snow cones, and then we do the show, and then I go home, and it literally, honestly, just starts again, because as anyone in my family will tell you, I am rarely seen without a notebook on my lap. And so if I'm watching How the Universe Works, or I'm reading my codependency book, I will have my notebook next to me, because I just never know. Inspiration is a strong word, because it sounds like Leonardo da Vinci or something. But I never know when something's going to strike me and like, oh, there you go. Boom. And that's so... It's a leisurely day for me, but it is a 24-hour day, because I also keep the notebook near me when I sleep. And if in the middle of the night I think of something, I write it down, and there you go. So, and I've always done that. My schedule hasn't changed a whole bunch. Like, I've always kind of done the same type of thing. I remember in like my second year, I was getting in here at like 8 in the morning, and Jeff had to sit me down and say, hey, look, I've never said this to anyone in radio before, but you need to stop coming in so early. Because your show is about your life. And if you're in here sitting at a desk, funny things aren't happening to you. And so take it easy. And that was, you know, 17 years or so ago. So
God help you the day that you are no longer doing radio. Because you are so trained to be thinking about life in terms of, how do I grab that and talk about that? How do I grab this and make that interesting? That when that goes away, you are going to be flailing.
Yeah, which is why I'm in no hurry to retire from radio, and why I know I will always do something. I have decided to pick up the book again, to try to write the book, and I also love to do essays.
Really?
I've done quite a few. I just haven't released them, which is kind of dumb. But
about your life? About
topics.
Stuff?
Yeah, just about topics. And so I will always do something like that, even if no one reads them. But I think that would scratch my itch of, oh, that. I can do something with that. Some Andy Rooney type sort of thing. So
I remember having that epiphany when I left radio the first time and tried to start my company, that I was doing something with coffee one morning, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I thought, oh, I have no one to tell about my dumb thoughts now.
What's the deal with decaf?
Yeah, it was bad.
You have to drink twice as much. Yeah, but no, that's what got me in trouble when I was an attorney, is that this is the kind of stuff I did.
You had to have a creative outlet.
Yes.
What did you do back when you were an attorney to get that out?
newspapers, underground newspapers for the law firm that I sent out to people, and
that's cool.
Making fun of the partners and doing fake stories and stuff like that.
I know the feeling. I have to write regardless of where it's going.
When email came out, it was just an epiphany. I remembered like Alexander Graham Bell. Like, I remember the first email I got from a friend, and I'm like, well, I'm done now, because that's all I did was just email stupid stuff. And what are you doing? Nothing. You want to go downstairs? And that was the beginning of the end of my legal career.
Yeah, my wife makes fun of me because I make every opportunity to write something, whether it's an email or whatever, into like a bit. I can't help it. And she made fun of me because she found out when I leave feedback on eBay, I make it into some sort of like comedy piece so that the person reading it will laugh.
Yeah, I remember my first day at my first big firm coming out of law school, sitting down with a senior associate, like a year away from being made partner. And he said, I'll get this wrong to some degree, but he said, basically, every day, if you're here after 8 a.m., you're late, and 7 a.m., you're not early. And if you leave by 6 p.m., you're leaving early. And then on the weekends, we usually like to get here about 9 a.m. on Saturdays and work until about 2. And then Sundays, we'd like to see you. And I laughed, and he's like, I'm not kidding. Like, those were the hours. Yeah.
So you had to be there regardless of whether you had anything to do.
Yeah, and I did a whole lot of faking. Mm-hmm. And I have learned, I talked to Nick about this, because, Nick's had jobs where there's very little going on. And that is torture. To me, that's torture. Like, I would much rather be doing something than pretending I'm doing something. But when I was an attorney, I did so much pretending I was doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Got 2 minutes. You want to share what your mornings look like? Or evenings?
Pretty much. Ooh. Wow. My whole day. No, I usually just get up. I watch Fox while I'm like drinking my coffee and everything. And then I usually just like do errands and stuff and podcasts until I roll in here. So I'm boring.
Teach Lucy tricks.
Well, she knows plenty of tricks. She doesn't need to know more. But no. Yeah, I'm pretty. I don't have like a cool routine to go over. I try to write stuff in my notebook too, but I'm nowhere near as diligent about it as Dave. I'll more be like, oh, that'll be funny for the show. And then I don't write it down or make any sort of note. And then I never think of it again. So I've been trying to carry this little guy with me more.
I'm super boring. I really am. Like, I kind of have two speeds. And one of them is covered with thunder blankets, watching how the universe works and reading books on codependency and thinking of what's going to interest people the next day.
Everybody's boring, though. But you have a unique ability to spin anything into a really interesting story, which is why you're good at what you do.
And I've also had the kind of life, and people ask me this all the time, like, okay, what percentage of the things you talk about really happen? And the answer is 100. I've never made a story up. Now, I'm sure I've sweetened them, although I recently got together, because my mom always accuses me of like, oh, that didn't happen. And I recently got together with my niece, Aura, who's like 6 years younger than me. And I would start a story and she would finish it. And that was wonderful. Because, after being told like, oh, no, that didn't happen, you made that up, you start to think, oh, God, I wonder if I just made up my whole childhood. And having my niece basically confirm, like, I was there when that happened. Like, for example, I've always had a story that my next door neighbor paid me a quarter to pick up like every apple in his yard. And even in 1973, that sucked. It was terrible pay. And Aura was like, oh, I remember that because you gave me like a dime of it. Like, you made me help you and you paid me a part of it. So.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bye.
Welcome back, DGS. A few minutes past 6 p.m. Get your tickets for the Cardinals game, which always matters, especially in a Cubs game. But it is now even more important since the Cards are winning and the Cubs are winning and it's more of a race. It's next Thursday, August 1st at 6:15 p.m. For $25, you get a ticket and you get a t-shirt at cardinals.com/theme. Rach, you got stuff?
I do. I've been dying to talk about Al Franken since the weekend. The New York Post wrote an article about him. They went and followed up after he resigned in disgrace at the end of 2017 because of all of his Me Too stuff. You guys will remember he was basically accused of kissing women against their will. And then, of course, there was the infamous photo of him pretending to grope a woman's boobs on a aircraft carrier or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. But the New York Post went and talked to him and, you know, did this piece on how depressed he is and how much his life sucks now and how we probably shouldn't have resigned. It was just so interesting to me that in 2 short years, actually less than 2 years, we're finally going back and looking at stuff like this and going, maybe all that pressure was kind of stupid. Part of the article is saying, you know, a lot of his accusers weren't actually credible. Isn't that crazy? And then kind of went back and criticized the whole hashtag believe women thing. To me, it's just such a duh. Anytime you say anything in absolutes, like all women do this and all men do this, it's just, as Dave would say, intellectually dishonest. To claim that every single time a woman makes a claim, you should automatically believe her is crazy and is something you would never say about a man. And now we're seeing real-time results of what happened. I have no care about Al Franken. I don't care that he resigned. I thought the picture was horrible. It was not classy. I don't want someone in government doing things like that, even in their past. I think it's gross. But to go back now and be like, you know what? Now that we think about it, a lot of these women weren't credible. It's like, well, you should have looked at that at the time. That would have been relevant information. But instead, everyone just hashtag believed women and put all this pressure on him, including other Democrats. And now he's out and a lot of people regret it.
Yeah, I read the same article and I don't disagree. I mean, I think that there was a rush to judgment on a lot of these and there was no nuance. That was the thing. There was no nuance. There was no subtlety. There was no the difference between going 10 miles over the speed limit or 100 miles over the speed limit. I thought that picture, you know, it's about as dumb of a picture as you can take. And then when multiple women said, oh, yeah, he's grabbing my butt. But I think every single person, every single man, every single person who was accused deserved due process, and very few got it because it was just everyone was screaming so loud, and it was either people were fired or they quit and then later regretted it. That's what happens. That's why we have due process. Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing that we learned about in law school is this is what due process is. And it just means taking your time, going through the process, making the prosecution, whoever that is, prove it, because sometimes they can't and sometimes they don't. And that's why everyone deserves it. But we have begun to pick and choose about who deserves due process and who doesn't. And when you just know someone's a monster, you don't think they deserve due process.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I've said this before on the air. It's such a tricky subject because it's kind of hard to prove sexual assault unless there's some sort of, like, honestly, like video evidence. So a lot of abusers rely on that fact, and a lot of people get away with abusing for years and years because it's difficult to prove and, you know, who are you going to tell? Who's going to believe you? I get the reaction to then go, well, we just need to believe everyone. But you can't. To say things like women don't lie about this stuff, I would say the majority of women don't lie, but there are plenty that have, and they've been caught, and it's really uncomfortable, and it's terrible for the people who actually have suffered abuse. So making a blanket statement like that does not actually work.
And again, I'll repeat myself. That's why you have due process. That's why when a woman says rape and they press charges, and a man or a man says rape, because you have both men raping men being accused of and women accused of raping men, that when someone is accused of rape or sexual assault and charges are filed and someone defends that person And they defend them vigorously, and part of that is cross-examining that person.
They attack your character.
They do whatever they need to do within the bounds of the law. And while if anyone, man or woman, in my life was raped, of course I would dread them being cross-examined and put through it again, and this is terrible, but as a lawyer, I would understand it.
Yeah.
Because we have the constitutional right to face our accuser and cross-examine the witnesses, because people do make up stories, not just about sexual assault, but everything.
Mm-hmm.
People lie about all sorts of things and file false claims and frivolous personal injury lawsuits. And that's why we really do need due process in everything.
Well, if you have an automatic slam dunk on, I'm going to be believed when I say this, bad people are going to capitalize on that,
and
period.
I'm very glad and proud that when the whole, you know, always believe women thing came out, I said no. And I think everyone on the show said no, because we could have gotten crushed for that. But it's just so silly. It's so silly to you always believe
anyone.
Fill in the blank.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Speaking of political stuff, I'm really looking forward to the Democratic debates next week. I'm really excited to see Marianne Williams. Is it Marianne? Mm-hmm. I always feel like
Marianne
I'm saying
Williamson.
Her. I always feel like I'm getting her name wrong, because it seems like it should be more of like a witchy, like crystal name than Marianne. There is a video floating around on the internet right now from a few years back where she had one of her inspirational speaking summits, and she makes all of the white people in the audience apologize to the black people for like segregation and racism. Annie Fry retweeted it, just like, you know, crazy eye emoji, like, what is going on? I cannot watch the video. It is too uncomfortable. I tried to watch it like 5 times from her Twitter page, and I just cringed so hard I had to keep Xing out of it. But I kind of like skipped through on silent, and it's so uncomfortable because there's like maybe 5 black people there, and they're all surrounded by like a horde of white people reaching out and putting a hand on them and praying. It's just really, really weird.
I have to say, when I've always known who Marianne Williamson was. I've never read one of her books, but she's a very successful self-help woo-woo kind of guru. When I heard that she was running for president, I rolled my eyes pretty hard, but I never, ever expected her to be this weird. I really didn't.
I will say, girlfriend, you are so she's awesome.
I've been a part of some interesting things like that in churches, because that's what that sounds like. Marianne Williamson, things like people are praying for each other. I mean, I don't know if she was at a church event, but I've been involved in some stuff like that was pastors preaching on race relations, and it wasn't quite that extreme, but it was uncomfortable in a way that I was like, am I uncomfortable because we're talking about race, or am I uncomfortable because this is a really weird topic to be broaching in this way in church? I don't know the answer to that question.
It's almost pretty egomaniacal to, especially for Marianne as a white woman, to feel like she's going to cause some sort of healing by calling for that. I just feel like the history of slavery in this country is something that none of us living in 2019 can comprehend at all. So be so egotistical to be like, I'm going to do something to mend these wounds. Like, I don't know, girl.
It leads me to a question that I was thinking about while we were talking about the whole political thing too, and due process and all that stuff. If there's a social crime, I'll call it not something that you could prosecute, something like what Al Franken did would be maybe borderline, because I don't know if there's litigation there or not, but something like, say, Ralph Northam, the Virginia governor, did. He didn't do anything illegal. You know, nobody's prosecuting him for his crimes, but socially speaking, he was almost done. He decided to hang on to his job. And I guess the question that I was sitting here thinking the whole time we're talking about that is there a place left in our society for forgiveness of that kind of thing? Or are we just past that? Is that even a tree we should bark up anymore?
I think there is definitely room for forgiveness, because I think one could argue that Trump has committed several social crimes and he's still hanging on, you know.
But people, I mean, overlook the society at large. It's his people are forgiving him.
Right.
But everybody isn't. Are there things that you can do socially? Come back. And he's I think, said, I will never apologize because there's no reason for it.
Right.
He doubles down on everything. But say somebody like Ralph Northam comes out, maybe he even did. He said, look, I'm sorry for this. I think he denied being in the picture, if I don't recall right. But if he came out and said, I'm sorry for this, it was me, I was the guy in the KKK uniform, will you please forgive me? Is there ever a place that we would do that anymore?
I think it may come back, but I think that it's for the most part gone, because we've gone from treating each other like human beings and treating each other like we're in litigation. That in litigation, if I were representing you, Ryan, and you're accused of something, and you said, I think I'm just going to apologize, I'd be like, no, you're going to shut up, because that's an admission against interest and you're going to lose the case. And so you make Rachel prove it. But interpersonally, it's much different. It can be, Rachel, I'm really sorry about that. And Rachel says, I get it. Let's move on. I forgive you. But we don't treat each other like people anymore. We treat each other like litigants. And as I talked about a couple weeks ago, the apology has become as dangerous as the act. Because you do something, you're accused of something, you're caught at something, you apologize. I can't remember the last time I saw an apology that most people said, well, okay, that's a pretty good apology. Now it's become, what? That's not an apology. That's a this and a that, and you're justifying and you're blaming and shaming.
Because everyone does justify and everyone does try to shift blame. I think if someone just straight up came out and said, yeah, that was me, and I can't say anything to make this better other than I am sorry. We've never seen that happen. I mean, we seriously haven't. I'm trying to think of one public figure who has ever just been like, yes, I'm sorry, and left it at that rather than being like, I'm going to try my hardest to blah, blah, blah. It's all about like softening the blow and like, yeah, I did it, but guys, this is why I'm still a good person. The only person I can think of who really did anything close to that is such small potatoes, but Aziz Ansari. He didn't actually do anything wrong, but he knew he was going to have to apologize for it. And he just said, yeah, I feel terrible that I made this young woman uncomfortable. And that was that. And he's pretty much back in public favor, because he didn't try to explain himself too much. He just said, yeah, my bad. And it was really humble and really cool, and he did the right thing.
Dan Harmon did it too.
Yeah, he absolutely did.
The creator of Community and Rick and Morty.
Yeah, I forgot about that. He just completely owned it. He's like, yes, I did this. I think I've learned, but I'm sorry. He didn't try to soften it at all. He just owned his stuff, and very few people actually do that.
Yeah, I think it's the difference between something that you can tell the person is saying from their heart. And if they hired, what's it called?
Ghostwriter or something?
No, it's when you get your, you know what, caught in it. Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, shoot, there's a specific name now for...
A fixer.
Basically, yeah. But when you hire one of those firms, you know what's coming next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. A few minutes shy of 7 p.m. Get your Cardinals tickets to DGS Night at the ballpark at cardinals.com/theme. For $25, you get a ticket and the DGS Cardinals t-shirt, and we hand it right to you in person, and that is next Thursday. Rach, you got more stuff?
I do. I want to say, I'm not giving anything away here. This is not an official thing. I just want, especially for my Twitter people, if there is some sort of article of clothing that is DGS branded that you would like, tweet it at me, because I feel like I have a block up. I'm trying to brainstorm different things right now.
Can we tell them why?
Let's just not. But if you have something in mind, like, man, I really wish I had a DGS pair of
specialty
board shorts.
Specialty item.
Yeah, specialty item.
Something.
Some sort of, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Tweet it at me, @RachelZ971. Earlier we were talking about like our morning routine and stuff. While I'm doing my daily Fox America's Newsroom, I spend a lot of time looking at my phone and trying to find stuff for the show. So I'm pretty familiar with like every different type of clickbait that you could possibly run across. And Ryan and I complain to each other about clickbait all the time whenever it's like Ed Sheeran breaks his silence over Taylor Swift feud. Like, oh my gosh, we've all been waiting for Ed to say something and he's broken his silence. Just stupid. All of it's stupid. But there's one phrase that if I had a magic wand and I could wave it over the entire planet and remove it from the press, it would be throws shade. because it's like political at this point. It's like Mike Pence throws shade at Donald Trump. And it's never actually throwing shade. And also, why did throwing shade become something that we actually used as a term in politics? I get why people use it on an interpersonal level, but whenever it shows up in like a Washington Post article, I think there's something really wrong. I'm just so done with that. The whole like, oh, Dave threw shade at Rachel earlier because he said blah, blah, blah. It's very rarely actually shady.
Yeah, I don't know. I complain about a lot of your generation's stuff. Like, I will ask Rachel because I don't know if I have a different phone feed than other people, but on my, or if I hit a button that said I'm 23, but so many of my articles are like, Ryan gets new shirt. And oh my God.
We are here for it.
And it's everything.
Yeah.
And I can't take it. And it's just like, I hate the way you're talking right now.
I hate reading real articles. Like, oh, that's a really fascinating thing. I'm going to click on that. And like The Sun or some of those British Daily Mail websites. And the article is interesting, but all the articles next to it make you feel like an absolute slimeball pervert.
Yeah, it's like her bikini's about to rip off. Yeah,
here's so-and-so coming up out of water.
Yeah.
Like, wow, what a great story that is.
So, Rach, you think all those you've like basically paid for or traded for?
All the Daily Mail stuff that it's like Demi, I don't know her last name, but her name's Demi and she's got giant boobs and a giant butt and she's never wearing any clothes. Emily Ratajkowski, they pay that tabloid to post photos of them so then they get more Instagram followers and they make money off of that. That is a thing.
That's a real thing?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, not just hearsay. That's actually happening.
No, it's a real thing. You can buy like ad time with them. We should raise some money and get Glover in there. Maybe raise the show's profile a little bit.
Here's Dave Glover shaking off some water like a duck.
I like
a
when
sexy duck.
I like when it's
this is how we talk now.
Supposed to like someone's supposed to be sexy and they're not. It's usually guys, and maybe I'm just too judgmental of guys, but it's like so-and-so showing you can still be buff at 61, and you're like, I think that's true, but this guy is not.
Yeah, whenever you see beach photos of, like, I don't know, like Lisa Rinna from The Real Housewives of Beverly
Thank
Hills,
you.
No one actually cares what Lisa Rinna's doing. She has paid to appear in the magazine, so...
Yeah.
Unless they're really
bad,
then...
on one of those sites of Nick Jonas the other day, of the Jonas Brothers, and it was talking about how he had a bad body, and I thought, wow... If Nick Jonas has a bad body, then I have a terrible body.
What's your body at that point? Jason Momoa, the Aquaman guy, they're saying that he has a dad bod. No, well, he doesn't. He's jacked. What are people talking about?
I mean, for him.
That's
crazy. For a movie
crazy.
Star?
Yeah.
I could see that.
Because they all do that.
I mean, that's their full-time job is working out until they go to a shoot.
But it's very, very famous that guys known for having a good body... You cannot keep that going 12 months out of the year.
Yeah.
That's why they pay tons of money for someone to kick their ass for 12 weeks to get them into shape.
That's what Jussie Smollett did.
And then...
and slam!
But then they just go back to having a normal good body.
Yeah.
Like Jason Momoa and Nick Jonas. I saw that picture too. And anyone who saw him would think, oh, that guy works out. But... He doesn't have a 32-inch waist anymore. He has a 36-inch waist because he's not on tour. And
man, just talking about clickbait. And yesterday I brought up like the Kylie Jenner video that was like, here's video proof that Kylie Jenner has horrible self-esteem. And I'm like, oh, you're not helping. What if we just didn't comment on the way other people looked, period? Does that eliminate 40% of media? I mean, even taking away like the political attacks we do on people's looks, how many people have brought up... The way Trump looks or the way, I mean, I've brought up the way Pelosi looks before. I'm not proud of that.
Yeah.
What if we just didn't comment on that?
I complain about all the different kinds of shaming, but I would co-sign that if it just like, I'm not saying like, let's make it a law, but I would be okay with that. If it just went away and you just no longer talked about how people looked and you didn't have all these clickbait ads. And,
why is it such an important part of society though? Because saying that,
especially in 2019. Because we have not evolved.
Yeah.
Now, this is something we've talked about on the show before, and you've talked about that the new feminism is, look at all of my boobs, because I'm showing you my boobs.
Yeah.
And it's a weird kind of feminism, and I think that we have devolved, because looks and bodies mean more today than they did 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. I think there is a percentage of women that really believe that and are really, really empowered by that. And good for them. I don't want to take that away from them. I just think it's dangerous when you call that in and of itself feminism, because then I think a lot of girls who would never normally want to, young girls who would never normally be like, yeah, here's my bikini photo, here's me looking sexy. That's just the norm for them. That makes me sad.
Women showing their bodies give men permission to say creepy things at all. But it's like when in the same time frame, you have Don Marsh getting fired because he says to Karen Foss, oh my gosh, you look fantastic. Your husband's a lucky man. And it is a cottage industry where families of women just post semi-naked or naked pictures of themselves and then sell cleanser. Like, that's a weird world. And I'm not at all saying, hey, women, pick one. Either be objectified or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's just a weird vibe when it's, I can't believe that you're saying a woman's looks are more important than her brain. But then right next door, it's look at these.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.